Welcome back to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. I am Andy Behrens, and it is an eventful week. NFL free agency is upon us. Things are happening. Players are relocating. Other players are re-signing with their own teams. We are learning once again that the NFL salary cap is just a pretend thing. It's not real. None of the money is real. It's just pretend. We're here to discuss signings today. Before we get into it, just quick heads up, bracket season is here. Play this year's Yahoo Fantasy 50K Tourney Pick'em Contest for your chance to win cash prizes. The bracket with the highest score will win the grand prize of $10,000 on a Las Vegas getaway. It is free to enter, and over 10,000 people will win cash prizes. Sign up now at tourney.yahoo.com. Okay, listen, you guys are going to be thrilled to hear that today's guest is he's one of the fantasy industry's preeminent take masters. I guess I would say he holds the modern record for consecutive days not being owned online. That's huge. You probably know him from his writing and podcasting duties at NBC Sports Edge, formerly Roto World. Hello, Denny Carter.
Hi, Andy. Thanks for having me back. And you're right. I mean, the streak of being unowned reaches into the many, many thousands at this point. It's one of the more amazing things that I know of, and I hope to continue it.
Yeah, Ripken and Carter. That's it, really.
Look, I was at Cal's 21-31 game.
Were you really?
Yeah, I really was. I was 12 years old. And my dad took me and my brother. We weren't like O's fans or anything, but you know, we live in Maryland and Cal's like an institution. So we went to that game. And so I was inspired, you know, as a 12-year-old, I said, I'm going to start my own streak one day of not being owned on the internet.
No, it's incredible. It dates back to the mid 70s. I think it's an astonishing streak. You guys can follow Denny on Twitter. It's an all ages follow. You should definitely follow him on Twitter. Kids, adults, everyone. At CD Carter 13. I am not going to list off each of his 420 burner accounts, but usually just know that they're out there replying to him all the time. Also, important reminder to listeners that I should get out of the way here at the top. This podcast is being taped at 4:30 Eastern on Tuesday. Out of respect for Denny, I'll mention no other time zones here, the legitimacy of which is debatable, I suppose. So 4:30 Eastern time, that is our cutoff. If any NFL news broke after 4:30 Eastern time, as it surely did, maybe Andy Dalton is already a Bear, who knows? That's going to be covered by Liz Loza on the Thursday podcast. So pre 4:30 Tuesday is Barron's, post 4:30 on Tuesday is Loza. That's our cutoff. So let's deal first of all with the Patriots, because they've kind of just sort of made a mess of free agency. They're spending money like the team in your salary cap draft, right? Who thinks that they can conserve money for some sort of later edge, but then they just mistimed it and they end up with Nelson Agholor. It's a kind of hideous collection of players that they've signed. I don't know. You can break it down. You've written all the blurbs. It's Jonnu Smith. It's Hunter Henry. It's Nelson Agholor. It's Kendrick Bourne. I've probably missed some guys. They re-signed Cam Newton. What do we make of this Patriots mess?
Right. Well, you caught me right in the middle of writing an extended take that'll be on NBC Sports Edge pretty soon tonight, meaning Tuesday night.
It's still Roto World in my bookmarks, by the way.
Well, we do have to sue you for saying Roto World now. I was hoping
fair.
You wouldn't.
No, it's fair.
All of those guys, I mean, do they inspire a ton of confidence, you know, in that offense from a fantasy perspective? I mean, to me, not really, because you have the two tight ends who, you know, could kind of cannibalize each other's opportunity. And I think that we all kind of know that in a run heavy offense. Now, the one thing I will say about New England's offense is that there could be some known unknowns, if I could quote Donald Rumsfeld, which I do often, actually, in that, you know, maybe this is part of a grand plan that we just can't know yet, in which the team revamps, overhauls its offense for 2021. That might include being aggressive in the draft and trading up and acquiring one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL draft. And running a more balanced offense than they did last year. Of course, in 2020, only the Ravens threw fewer passes, than the Patriots. So in that sort of offensive environment, it really is impossible to see how both Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith can become like every week set it and forget it type starters in 12 team leagues.
So Cam Newton last year, and I'm glad that you mentioned the possibility of the Patriots. Not that they're a team that generally like trades up in the draft and tries to move to some sort of prime drafting position, but it's possible because certainly Cam Newton can't be their long-term plan at quarterback. They didn't sign him that way. He averaged 177 passing yards per game last year, which is fine if it's 1975, and it's not okay if it's 2020, right? Like, that's crazy. It is a crazy number in the modern era. Obviously, he had COVID and he came back from that and was not good for several weeks. And there's all sorts of reasons there. Only had a couple of 300-yard games, and they were against absolutely horrendous defenses, right? I think it was Seattle and Houston. And every other game was, there were a bunch of games with double-digit passing yardage, which, again, something you never see in the modern NFL. He has to be better than this, right? Or is that just what we're going to get from Cam? Some of it had to be the receiving core, I guess, is what I'm saying. He can't be that bad again.
Sure. I mean, they had, bar none, the worst receiving group in the league last year. I mean, when Jacoby Meyer is your like unquestioned number one target dominator, I think, you probably have an issue with the pass catching group. And Bill Belichick knows that. And that's why they're going wild here in free agency. That definitely did have something to do with it. And Cam Newton said he never recovered from being out with COVID, and that does, he's not talking about like from the health standpoint, although that could have been a factor too for a bit there, but he's talking about from being behind. He said, I missed 2 weeks, like completely missed 2 weeks. I come back, the offense has advanced. I've lost pace with how the team is progressing, and that affected him for the rest of the season. Do I think he could be better? Well, I mean, it's hard to be worse. So, yeah. So yes, but I don't think we're going to see anything close to like a vintage, Cam type situation.
Yeah, he does get a full normal off season with the team, presumably, which helps a lot. He obviously didn't have that last year's late signing too. I have a difficult time imagining a path to either of these tight ends. It's a bummer with Hunter Henry because maybe it's not a bummer, but I'd kind of penciled him into either Cincinnati or Jacksonville. I thought that was a pretty natural fit. There's still some teams out there that have glaring needs. Maybe by the time people listen to this podcast, those teams will have filled those needs. Zach Ertz is hanging out there as a trade ship and whatnot. But this is not where I expected two tight ends to go. There has been, without calling anybody out, I've seen some relatively shorthand, maybe lazy analysis about how these two tight ends, there was another time when the Patriots had featured two tight ends, right? In Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski. I see almost no similarities between these two players and those two players. I see almost no similarities between present day Cam Newton and prime Tom Brady. So I don't think I can fit either one of these guys into my top 10, maybe even top 12 tight ends.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think they are outside the top 12. Brady threw 611 passes in 2011. With Hernandez and Gronk, that was the third most that year. 611 would have been second most last year. Okay, wow. In 2020, the Patriots are not with Cam Newton now. This is the thing about like the known knowns and unknown unknowns or whatever is that if they operate anything close to the offense that they did last year, they're not going to come any, in the range of 600 passes. It's going to be more like 400. Yeah. And then you have to say, well, if they're going to be Hernandez and Gronk, they're going to have to dominate targets. Those two got basically like 39% of the targets, the team's targets that season. Are you going to project 39% combined for Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith? I think it's presumptuous. I don't know what you say.
Yeah, and we normally lean on, you expect tight ends to be a big part of what teams do when they get like in goal-to-go situations, stuff like that. And the Patriots are just going to let Cam run from what I could tell when they get inside the red zone too. So that complicates it further. I wouldn't think you would sign these two guys to be almost 40% of the target share, but it's not great. Like, it's just not great for the fantasy value of either player, I think. What do we make of the teams that they leave behind? So what's left for the Chargers? Is it Donald Parham season? Is that a thing? are they gonna be in the mix for Ertz? I don't know. Are we excited about that guy? He's not a former basketball player, right? So we shouldn't be that excited about
him. No, he's a former XFLer.
Right.
And you sounded like my dad when you just said, is it Donald Parham season? It is. I can confirm that much. You know, he's of much fantasy football intrigue because he's this giant dude who's pretty fast, who dominated the XFL. I know the Zoomers don't remember the XFL, but I do. And then, you know, every time he was targeted seemingly last season, he caught a touchdown. So,
yeah.
You know, if he has the top spot in the tight end depth chart, which I think is, you know, again, presumptuous, in that offense and Justin Herbert led Chargers offense, I think that's pretty good. I feel like he shapes up as, you know, a late round guy. You know, every year we find a late round tight end who can become like a top 10, top five, sometimes option. He looks like that. But again, it's March.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And then Tennessee losing Jonnu Smith, also losing Corey Davis, who we'll get to later. It's just AJ Brown and like Anthony Firkser, right? Is it Firkser season? Is that going to happen?
It could be. It's funny, I know, and they re-signed Jeff Swaim, which is huge. I'm kidding, but you know Firkser, like he operated as the number, like the primary pass catching tight end in that Tennessee offense for a time last year, and that could have had something to do with injuries, ankle or knee issues that Jonnu Smith was going through that, of course, were not being reported by anyone. And it was maddening from a fantasy perspective to see, Firkser run most of the routes and see more targets week after week around midseason. But yeah, I mean, I kind of like him too, if he gets the opportunity. I think basically what you want with a late round tight end is a super athletic guy who has the job all to himself, and you know, like a Logan Thomas from last year.
Yeah, I feel like I can actually see a scenario where I end up ranking Firkser ahead of either New England tight end. That feels weird because we're accustomed to like starting Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, but kind of like Firkser from our current vantage point. He is, of course, a product of the Harvard tight end factory. It's literally the only thing that school is known for. So yeah, I'm kind of interested in Firkser, and right now, like, Tennessee just doesn't have very many receiving options at all. It looks like AJ Brown, whether they want to do it or not, is going to have to get like 130, 140 targets. So that would be pretty exciting.
It is exciting.
Let's talk about your new coworker, Drew Brees, headed to NBC Sports. I assume he's going to have a role on the NBC Sports Edge, fantasy podcast along with yourself, Hayden Rotopat.
Sure.
Looking forward to that.
Thank you.
You've probably restructured your contract a little bit to accommodate Brees, I would guess.
I made room and he's blurbing right now. Brees is on the news shift, and he's blurbing like a maniac. He's doing well.
Are all the Brees kids blurbing as well? The three boys on the couch and the girl.
All seven Brees kids there are part of the team. They do weekends mostly, but yeah, we're very happy to have the Brees family.
It's got to be tense. I know Rotopat trains the blurbers, and he doesn't do it with kindness, as I
and he's
bru-
he's brutal. Yeah, with the children, just brutal. I keep telling him, you know, ease up, man.
So Brees retires. I wrote a quick thing this past week on it. Like, amazing fantasy career. So shout out to Brees for all the fantasy points. Like, 15 straight years of top 10 positional finishes is unreal. Obviously, 80,000 career yards. He has 5,000 yard seasons. It's a pretty incredible resume. Not to go too far down the rabbit hole with a player who is of no use to us in fantasy anymore. But I was looking at Breeze's Pro Football Reference page the other day, and like, you know, they've got like the combine stats on there now. He was super athletic. Like, he was sneaky athletic coming into the league. I actually stacked up his combine numbers compared to Josh Allen's, and they're like, they're almost dead on. The 40 times are really close. Breeze had like a 32-inch vertical and Allen was like 33. I think Breeze was quicker in the agility stuff. Like, he was a, you know, I mean, we just think of him now as a guy whose arm was kind of shot in the last couple of years, mm-hmm. and he never ran or anything like that. But he was pretty frisky when he came into the league.
That's shocking. I remember him, you know, for the Chargers, and I don't recall him being super athletic. That, you blew my mind.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. You should try. I mean, it's not like he's exactly Josh Allen. He wasn't as big as Josh Allen or anything like that. But the numbers are a little bit closer than I would have remembered. And I've forgotten the entire Chargers chapter of the Drew Brees story. And it's pretty good. Like, there's highlights out there of Drew Brees like catching touchdown passes from LaDainian Tomlinson, and it's fun. They used him as a little bit of a Taysom Hill. It's nice. But so let's talk about what's left at quarterback in New Orleans, because this is going to be like the fun, I think, a pretty fun storyline of the offseason and heading into the exhibition season, right? They re-signed Jameis Winston, not for a lot, like for a year, for pretty cheap quarterback money. And then they gave Taysom Hill like $1 trillion in imaginary money that he'll never see, that is part of the salary cap games that teams play. So I feel like either of these two, whoever wins the job, maybe it's fool's gold because the other one could always take over, but I will be pretty tempted to put whoever wins this job into my top 12.
I don't know if I will be. And here's what I mean by that. If Jameis Winston wins a job, and we might not know that until August, even like late August, which is going to be, you know, difficult, let's say, for fantasy purposes. Even if Winston wins a job, Taysom Hill's not going anywhere. Yeah. You know, he's still going to come in on potentially short yardage, potentially goal line situations, and he's going to, you know, in that scenario, he saps the value and the production of Jameis Winston as the starter. So, you know, my inclination is just to say, please, just put Taysom as the starter. And let's go with it, you know, because A, you get the rushing upside, which is, as I said in a blurb today, Andy, I called it tantalizing, which I thought was a good description. Okay.
It is, in fact. You know,
and we see, you know, the kind of, you know, the cheat code for finding a late round quarterback who can emerge as an every week starter in fantasy is that rushing upside, you know, year after year. That's what we usually find. And we saw that in 4 starts with Taysom Hill last year with the Saints. You know, he was really solid for fantasy. So I don't know if I would be super high on Jameis Winston if he wins a job.
Do we think that Taysom has a little bit of an, I mean, it was Taysom that obviously started in place of Breeze last year. Do we mm-hmm. think he has an edge in this competition heading into it, or do we think it's really even right now?
I would think so.
Yeah.
Because of last year and, you know, it, you know, low key, it went very well.
Yeah.
You
right. Know, 3-1.
And in fact, I was thinking, you know, would they keep him in even when Drew Brees came back? And I think that says a lot about, you know, how Sean Payton sees him. I think it says a lot about the experience that he has in that offense. Yeah, I do think that he does that, but you know, the mainstream media is saying otherwise.
So the one thing about Taysom is he didn't reach 40 pass attempts in any game. Obviously he's inclined to run the ball if you know, a first option isn't there. Is this in your mind, is this like, I don't want to say that it's a killer for Kamara's value. It's obviously not that. He's great. But he was also a player who was on pace for basically the single season reception record among running backs. And then Breeze left and that mm-hmm. that fell off a cliff. A little bit of that was injury. A lot of it was Taysom Hill.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I mentioned that we might not know who the starter is until August, that will affect how, you know, we should value and evaluate Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara, the two target dominators in that offense. You know, in Taysom starts last year, Kamara's targets were cut in half. That's significant. You know, there's no way around it. Like Kamara could be just as good or even a little better than he was last year. And he's an amazing player. And but if you're not seeing that glut of targets, yeah, you're just not going to be able to produce the way he has. On the other hand, Michael Thomas was really solid for fantasy with Taysom Hill under center. His target share went way up compared to in Drew Brees starts. So I think it's going to be tough to evaluate exactly how we're supposed to draft these two guys, Thomas and Kamara.
Knowing that it's going to be one of Jameis Winston or Taysom Hill, where would you have Thomas slotted among wide receivers roughly if you had to draft a league right now?
That's a good question.
It's also an unanswerable question because I feel like it's pretty different depending on who gets the nod.
I'm trying not to be too hot takey here, which I know is a shock.
Which is not your nature.
I would still say outside of the top five.
Oh yeah, yeah, I would yeah, as well. I might say outside the top 15. I mean, I just don't 15? Know. Like, I don't process uncertainty very well in these situations, and I'm a little bit afraid.
All right. Yeah, well, I mean, I do think that you will have to pay a premium for him, no matter what.
Yeah.
No matter who's starting. So you're going to have some confidence that the bounce back is coming no matter what.
Now I'm thinking that I only want these guys in best ball, and then I would have to get both of them. Maybe that's the play. If you want to invest in Saints quarterbacks, that's the only way to do it. Another quarterback that this is a really fun signing. I was crestfallen. There's a good blurb word for you.
That's a good word. Yeah.
I was crestfallen when Ryan Fitzpatrick went to the Washington football team. It is, I think, unambiguously good for fantasy purposes. It is good for Terry McLaurin. Obviously Alex Smith wasn't pushing the ball downfield last year, poor quarterback play prior to Smith taking over. McLaurin still managed to give us a really, really good season. I feel like with someone with Fitzpatrick's tendencies, right? He's going to push the ball downfield a lot. Super crafty. He's at that like sweet spot of a career. I think is he going to be 39? I think he's at that, but yeah, he's still like at that sweet spot of a career where he's seen everything. He processes things really quickly. You're not going to fool him. And he still has the physical skills to make the throws. He's just been so much better these last couple of years. So this is obviously great for McLaurin. It's great for that offense. It is a bummer to me as a Bears fan who had, you know, that was like, I've already given up on the whole Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson thing. And I'm staring down Andy Dalton and I really don't want that to happen. And so I was thinking maybe I would get a year of Ryan Fitzpatrick, but no, that's not happening. And then the Ryan Fitzpatrick to Denver dream is dead as well. But Washington, yeah, kind of fun.
I think it could be a really fun, you know, not just for McLaurin, but you know, for Antonio Gibson, for Logan Thomas, if they can find like, you know, another receiver, whether it's Sims or whoever else, I'm talking about both Sims, the Steve Sims and Cam Sims, you know, someone who would be like, you know, a deep threat who could, you know, catch those deep passes, aggressive passes from, of course, McLaurin can do that as well. But I'm excited about not only the potential opportunity for those pass catchers in Washington, but for Fitzpatrick, like providing, you know, what he does for fantasy managers who you fade top quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And I think his presence could be important for, you know, people who stick by a late round quarterback approach in 2021. And I think that, you know, you're going to see that less and less because of how quarterbacks are evolving and that dual threat quarterback becoming more prevalent. You know, I talked about that with JJ on Living Stream at the end of the season. So yeah, Fitzpatrick signing is wonderful news, I think, for fantasy.
Yeah. I don't want to get too off topic on free agent signings, but I actually do want to ask you about that. It, like going late round at quarterback, but you know, for years, totally viable strategy, winning strategy. You could almost always find a 4,000 yard quarterback late in it. I mean, you can still find a 4,000 yard quarterback late in the draft. The problem is they're not gonna run for 500 yards and 6 or 8 or 10 touchdowns, right? And so, a lot of us are thinking more and more that we want the dual threat guys, and we're willing to pay a little bit for it. We're willing to draft them round 5, round 6. Do you still think it's viable to go late rounds, no rushing threat sort of quarterback?
You know, if you're looking for an every week starter, no, I actually don't think that that's the way to go. Now, the key will be, are we going to get maybe 2 or 3 dual threat guys who we can get in the double digit rounds?
Yeah. You know,
and that remains to be seen, whether it's one of the rookie quarterbacks who can do that, the Justin Fields type, or Taysom. I'm trying to think of some other guys who might fall in that range. I don't think that you can reliably draft, you know, just a pocket passer in that part of the draft and say, okay, like I'm good to go. You know, and especially if you're getting into like super flex 2 QB discussions, I think that you're putting yourself at a disadvantage there.
Okay, let's leave the quarterback position alone for a little bit. Aaron Jones kind of surprised me in that he resigned with the Packers. I actually like. It's probably the best case scenario for Aaron Jones fantasy wise. Didn't really see it coming because there'd been so much buzz about Aaron Jones going to perhaps Miami. Mm-hmm. It seemed like the most Jetsy signing in the world to throw money at a player like Aaron Jones, but it didn't happen. I don't know your thoughts on this. Like, it's great for Rodgers, for Jones himself. Yeah. This is, other than maybe going to San Francisco, I feel like staying in Green Bay was the best case for him.
Yeah, it probably is. And you know, he only saw 45% of the team's carries last year, which is, you know, not a ton, you know, but he's never been, you know, a traditional workhorse back. And Matt LaFleur has said, that's not what we're going to do with the backfield. He has been incredibly efficient in back-to-back seasons. And he has that pass catching role in the offense. You know, Jamal Williams is gone. Now, who knows where he's going to land? I really hope he lands in Seattle, but that's a different discussion. But Aaron Jones has had 60 some targets in both of the past two seasons, and that includes missing 2 games last year. So, I think it's probably best for him. Am I disappointed that 1 week prior, Roto Pat and I called Matt LaFleur a genius, and then he threw a bunch of money at the running back? I'm a little put off. We're going to get over it.
That team's 2020 draft just gets more amazing by the day, right? Like they go quarterback in the first round, who's just never going to play. They go running back in the second round, and then they throw a bunch of money at the running back that they could have let walk. They go tight end, I think, in the third round, and that tight end wasn't Robert Tonyan, who just had a phenomenal season. So not going to get anything out of an entire draft class, which is amazing to me.
And it worked. It seemingly worked out somehow.
It has. It's totally worked out. Do you think there's going to be a role for AJ Dillon this year?
Well, you know, he's never had a role as a pass catcher. That doesn't mean he can't do it, but you know, in college and last season was not treated as anything close to a pass catcher. And Aaron Jones is. So I think you could see Aaron Jones's targets tick up in 2021. But you know, getting back to that draft real quick, here's what they did. You have to give the Packers credit. They motivated Aaron Rodgers to try to win a Super Bowl out of nothing but spite. And he almost did it.
He did. He almost did it. His transformation from, not that he was bad. He hadn't been bad for like 3 prior seasons, but he hadn't been any kind of fantasy difference maker at all. Right. Like it was touchdown totals in the 20s, 4,000 yards, but nothing exceptional. And then to actually make a run at 50 touchdown passes this year with, as Mike Salfino would point out, a ton of 1 and 2 yard touchdown passes that maybe we don't see again. Like what are you doing with Aaron Rodgers next year? He's actually a real rankings challenge for me because he's obviously just had this fantastic season, total supernova season. And there's no rushing element to his game really at all.
So I think that those short touchdown passes, it's definitely him calling those. Like he definitely like you know, wants to pick up the easy touchdowns, and who can blame him? I it's all the respect in the world for that. But, you know, he's due for, I know I'm going to say the R word, regression, you know, and people don't like that word, and they pretend it's not real, but it is. And, you know, his touchdown rates spiked last season. The Packers as a whole, as a team, were scoring every 94 yards, which is outrageous. Okay, the league average was 136 wow. yards per touchdown. They were at 94. There's going to be some backsliding in the touchdown scoring category for the entire Green Bay offense. Devontae Adams is a touchdown machine. He's going to continue. I mean, you know, he's not going to score 18 touchdowns in 14 games like he did in 2020. But I do think that you need to be a little bit. I do think Aaron Rodgers profiles as an overdrafted quarterback.
It also felt like last year, I mean, Tonyan's a really good player. It felt like he caught like six or eight touchdowns where no one else was even in the camera frame, where he was just alone, forgotten man in the end zone. They didn't even think like it was necessary to cover him. So crazy season for him as well. I guess we should talk about Corey Davis to the Jets, right? That's a thing.
It's
very difficult for me to put an appropriate price on this player because we don't know who's going to be a quarterback for the Jets, right? There's a lot of unknowns here. It was only a couple weeks ago that I tried to give people a hard sell on Denzel Mims as an interesting player, and I think he goes down a peg now. It's Jamison Crowder, it's Mims, it's Corey Davis. This is at least a receiving core that I could imagine a quarterback who might be on the trade market or who might be a free agent looking at and saying, I could work with that.
I agree. You could do worse, I would say, than the Jets receiving core. Davis last year was his, you know, kind of breakout, if you want to call it that. A lot of that had to do, though, with AJ Brown being either dinged up or out with that knee injury. That fed his opportunity. I don't really know if you can bank on that in another scenario, especially an entirely different team. There's also the issue of, you know, wide receivers who go to new teams typically see, you know, a decrease in production, mm-hmm. you know, and we, which runs against what we typically like to think. We like to, new offense. This is the year, you know, for this guy. He just needed a new, a change of scenery or whatever. And that's not the case most of the time. So, are you going to have to spend a high draft pick on Corey Davis? Of course not. I mean, he's probably going to like go undrafted in 10 team leagues. So, I would say Mims is probably my preference among those two.
Yeah. Mims was a guy who crushed the combine, and I thought showed pretty well in an utterly abysmal, passing game situation.
Yes.
Yeah, with the Jets last year. One other thing that I want to get your take on, and that is because there are a bunch of lesser signings that we don't have to necessarily roll through. Devontae Booker, John Ross to the Giants, a bunch of other things happened. The Bucks are running it back with pretty much everyone, as they should. Yeah. Great season. Carlos Hyde to Jacksonville. This happened, and all of fantasy Twitter seemed to say simultaneously, this is great news for James Robinson, right? And it's probably great news for James Robinson. I'm incredibly fond of James Robinson. Had him in a lot of leagues mm-hmm. last year. I think it's a great story out of Illinois State. But everywhere Carlos Hyde goes, he ends up with a role. Like I feel like I've done this thing before where we say, oh, it's just Carlos Hyde. This is great news for Chris Carson. This is great news for whoever. And then all of a sudden you look up and Carlos Hyde has like 180 carries.
Right. No, you're right. I don't think that it's fantastic news for James Robinson. I mean, Robinson dominated backfield touches and snaps and everything, largely because there was no one else. I mean, there was almost literally nobody else. Once Chris Thompson went down with that injury, it was over. Like, James Robinson was going to see every single snap in that offense, and that's what happened. You're not going to see that this year, and Carlos Hyde is probably the reason. I do think height is kind of like a barometer, like a human barometer of how good your starting running back is. Like Hyde's not probably going to, you know, probably not going to see the field if Robinson is good or solid. Right. But if Robinson like struggles a little bit with blitz pickups or drops a pass or something, suddenly Hyde creeps in there. And then you look at the box score and you go, wait a second, Hyde had 14 carries to Robinson's 11. Wait a second, what's going on here? You know, that you, we could see that scenario playing.
Yeah, out. I guess that worries me a little bit. Like, it's not, it, obviously, it's not the worst news for Robinson, because Carlos Hyde, while, you know, like, he's going to end up having a really nice pro career, he's not an exceptional runner by NFL standards, I would say. But it's not, this isn't nothing. This isn't like bringing in just a straight backup, I think. Because again, everywhere Hyde goes, he plays. So I'm a little bit worried. I've got some dynasty shares of Robinson, and I'm not like high-fiving anybody about this. I'm not thrilled by the news.
I mean, you know, Robinson was always going to see some competition, you know, this off season. And I guess it's better to be Carlos Hyde than it would be to like, for them to like spend a high draft pick on a running back or something. You know, that would be concerning.
No, actually, that's a really good point. This probably does signal that they're not in on any of the, you know, top three, top four running backs in the draft class. That's a really good point.
That's good news for Robinson, for sure.
Yeah. Give us, I mean, I would feel terrible bringing you on this podcast and not asking you for some kicker takes. Sure. There have been a lot of re-signed kickers. The Bears locked up Cairo Santos. I'm really excited about that. The whole town is buzzing about it. Nobody cares about the quarterback situation at all. We've locked up both a punter and a kicker. How are you feeling about that? What's the biggest kicker signing so far?
Yeah, well, you know, Santos, obviously a guy who's been released by 7 or 8 teams, you know, get signing a big contract.
When you can give a guy like that 3 years, you got to do it, right?
You have to. I mean, I think it shows how desperate, how thirsty the franchise was for a kicker who can actually make a kick, right? I mean, Santos comes in and he's like pretty good last year, and they're like, oh my God, we're going to give you the keys to the kingdom, you know? I will say Cairo Santos has come a long way from doing a cameo for me for a fantasy Mensa bit 2 years ago to now being one of the highest paid kickers in the NFL. That's a Cinderella story, and I appreciate that. I don't, for real though, I don't get it. I don't understand why they would do that, but they are the Bears.
That they are. Can you elaborate a little bit on the cameo? If people haven't seen Fantasy Mensa, they're fantastic segments, and they should be searched out. They're amazing.
Yes. If we were smart, Pete and I would have started a Twitter account of Fantasy Mensa, but we did not. So Fantasy Mensa is a bit that I did a while back with Pete Overzet, and we would be fantasy analysts, and we would talk about ways to, get the edge, get the advantage on your league mates. But of course we did it in a very dumb way. And Pete actually surprised me with a cameo from Cairo Santos, telling me to hang in there, to keep pumping up kickers. And it was a very strange message, and he clearly didn't read much about what we were going for, but it fit into the segment just barely. And we ran with it for Fantasy Mensa.
Well, the Bears have made sure that he is not going to need that cameo income anymore, I would assume. He's probably pricing them at, like, I don't know, $400 or $500 if you want a minute of Cairo Santos's time. It's going to cost you now.
Now it is. I should, you know, mention that Michael Badgley signs with the Chargers today. That's huge, you know. People are going to remember the 9 missed field goals and many missed extra points. I forget how many last year, especially in primetime games, which, you know, sticks with people. So everybody will shun him, and he'll probably lead the league in field goal attempts. So he has that going for him.
I don't know that I can think of a case off the top of my head in sports history where somebody who had been good at their job gave themselves a nickname and then was almost immediately bad, like eternally.
You got, when you name yourself the Money Badger, and he tried to copyright it, right?
Yes, trademarked he did. I believe he did.
Yeah, when you name, you have to then go out and make all the kicks. You have to be
all
great.
Of the kicks. Yeah.
You are putting a tremendous amount of pressure on yourself, and to and to do that and then, you know, start choking, especially in primetime games.
Yeah.
That's something that people won't forget.
All right. Well, this has been great. I thank you for coming on the podcast. Hugely appreciate it. Big fan of your Twitter feed, your ongoing streak of being unowned, and of course all your work at NBC Sports Edge. Tell the people where they can keep up with you and what you're working on.
At CD Carter 13 for the good tweets, and and then I'm writing
those are the premium tweets.
There's a for 99 cents per tweet, you can see all of them. And so I appreciate all the subscribers. I'm writing up a free agency piece for NBC Sports Edge. You know, later I will have a piece, you know, later in March, I'll have a piece on touchdown regression for the league's worst offenses and see if we can find any edge there in offenses that we hate.
Excellent. Thanks again for joining us. Remember, folks, to sign up for this year's Yahoo Fantasy 50K Tourney Pick'em Contest. That is important. You got to do it. If you are looking for Bracket Talk, follow the Yahoo Sports College Podcast with Dan Wetzel, Pete Thamel, and our very good friend Pat Forty from SI. Follow Post It Up with Chris Haynes for all things NBA. Follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. Huge thanks to Raghu. Huge thanks to Denny Carter. Once again, I am at Andy Behrens. He is at CD Carter 13. We will be back later this week. But until then, we are out.